Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to see everyone. Familiar faces, some new faces. I'm not going to go through any formal introductions or past history with all of you. If you're someone that my family and I don't know, that we haven't met in the past, please feel free to take the time throughout the course of the morning to come and meet us, and we'll try to come and find you. I do want to begin by thanking the church and thanking the elders here for giving us the opportunity to come and to share this new work and this new, as we're calling it as a family, this new adventure for us. We are excited by what God has done up in Fairbanks and what he is doing. And so this morning during Sunday school, I want to take the opportunity to share as much as I can, certainly in somewhat of an abbreviated form, what's happening in our life and what's happening in Alaska in particular. And I want to do it in such a way that I can finish up and we can answer some questions if you have them. That's really, as we've talked about this, really since last summer, we found that that's the best way to get across some of the ideas of what's going on and what we're going to be doing. So there will be time, if you have any, for questions at the end. We are going to go ahead and jump right in. There is a church in Alaska, in Fairbanks. It's called Covenant Reformed Church. And we, as a family, had the opportunity to spend the summer there last year, 10 weeks, and see if this is working too. Okay, so, and we appreciate and we're thankful for the prayers and the support that we had in that work. How did we get here? And by here, I mean, how did we get to Fairbanks the first time, and how did we get to this point in our life where we are going back in the spring of 2018? Covenant Reformed Church was in a situation where they needed an interim pastor for the summer. They're a mission church, and we'll talk about that in a little bit more detail in a bit. But basically what that means is they're just really trying to get off the ground. They've been in existence for as a church now, I think, for about 3 or 4 years, maybe as many as 5. But obviously there was some time at the beginning where there were families that were meeting as a Bible study, and that's before they were actually even started as a church. And so they were in this situation last summer where their pastor had taken a new calling, and they needed some pastoral ministry. And through connections with different people, including Reverend Burke Shade, who some of you may remember was here years ago doing a conference at Oakwood, and Pastor Jack Phelps, who has been on the ground in a CREC church for 35 plus years now, and then our family and people knowing that I was teaching and that I had summers off, things worked out in God's providence in such a way that we were actually able to go up there for those 10 weeks, really from mid-June to mid-August. You see this picture of Josiah here. This was on one of our many flights that summer. It was tiring work. You kind of just go and you just jump in. But it was exhilarating work. It was a blessing to our family to be with this young congregation and minister with them and get to know them and minister to them. And so everything really kind of got kicked off for us last summer in that set of circumstances. And one of the things I've been telling people since last summer is from probably April of last year on, I had this question rolling around in my head. What does interim pastoring look like? So there is no manual that anyone has written that covers everything for even being a full-time pastor in a long-term call, let alone being in this situation where you're there ministering for an in-between time, right? And I had been asking this question and praying about this since we knew that we were going. So that started in April. We didn't get up there till June. And there are no real hard and fast answers to that question. You've got to kind of take a congregation where they're at and the circumstances that they find themselves in the situation that they find themselves in, what we knew for certain going in is that their expectation of me in particular was to preach the word, right? That had in one sense left them as their pastor left. And they had some weeks where they were trying to fill in and do their best, but they immediately felt like they were as a small congregation, a ship without a rudder, so to speak. So we knew that that was going to happen. We knew that that was going to be the bulk of my calling while we were up there for those 10 weeks. But then you're spending 10 weeks just trying to get to know the people, get to know the families, try to figure out where they're at, what their spiritual needs are, have our family get connected with them and their families get connected with us. And this is a picture from the facility. The congregation rents a Methodist church on Sundays. And so the Methodist church has their services in the morning, and then the congregation will use the sanctuary in the afternoon. So Sunday service is at 2 in the afternoon, which is a whole different kettle of fish in the summer anyway, when you're basically dealing with 24 hours of daylight, which is what they do have up there. One of the things that came up that I didn't necessarily know was going to be part of the work that summer, but became evident pretty quickly that it was needed, was some kind of leadership training. Being a mission church, they at this point, they do not have any elders on the ground at the church. They do not have any deacons. And they knew right off the bat that we were going to be there for 10 weeks, and then we were going to be going back to our, you know, regular day-to-day full-time work. And so in an informal way, I was able to have the opportunity with several of the men in the church over several different conversations and meetings and sessions, kind of help them figure out what their roles needed to be, even if, you know, this sort of kind of lay leadership category, as they were going to and they were committed to keep the church going after we left. The other thing that was always in the back of everyone's minds is that we knew that part of what the summer was going to be was sort of like a trial run, sort of like a candidating. They were watching us and seeing if we seemed like a good fit to them, and we were kind of doing the same thing, not knowing if anything would or could or even should come of that more long term. But that just gives you a little bit of an idea of what the summer was like. And then we did receive a call, and I received a call, and as we all know, as we've been doing the church thing over the course of our lives, I received a call, but our family really received a call to come. And that call came from Pastor Jack Phelps. He is the sponsoring pastor of this mission church. He's the pastor of Covenant Bible Church, which meets in a little area outside of Anchorage. Anchorage is about 6.5 hours south of Fairbanks. And we received that call officially in October of 2018. And we officially, affirmatively answered the call in March of 2019. So as you see there, there's a time, right? There's a gap in between the call and us answering. And because it wasn't necessarily an immediate sure thing for us on our end of things. In fact, when we first received the call, Jessica and I asked for a month, maybe really 2 months, to pray about it and work on some of the details. And they were more than happy to give that to us. They recognized that no one physically moves to interior Alaska in the middle of the winter anyway, so we were already pushed off to the spring and summer in terms of timing. And we initially, after those 2 months of praying and talking and thinking about it, we initially turned down the call. I had been, at that point, candidating at a few other churches, and we weren't sure if we could make it work in terms of what you know, obviously, God does what he will, right? But we have some responsibilities, and I have some responsibilities as a husband and a father. And just looking at that and saying, I don't know if this is right for us at this time in terms of the numbers and the circumstances. And as my wife will say, even in some things that she's written over the last few months, like, who moves to Alaska, right? Like, nobody does that, really, do they? I mean, to go for the summer, that was a huge blessing for our family. And I got to do some work, and we got to do the other stuff that you do in Alaska during the summer. But to move there, and we couldn't really, in our own humanness, we couldn't really wrap our minds around that. And then there were the details of life, like how do we make sure we can eat? How do we make sure we can have a roof over our heads? And so we did turn down the call. One of the things that happened, and just real briefly, I'll share this story, is that as I was candidating at other churches, I was trying to figure out ways to, you know, financially put things together. Because there's a lot of churches in the CRAC that are smaller, and there are certain expectations by the congregations and by the pastors in terms of the finances. And I was working on putting some work together because I was working on another call at another church. And what came out of that was a very productive job online with Liberty University, which we very quickly as a family, and my wife and I in particular, recognized was certainly this was by God. In fact, I was getting emails from human resources at Liberty welcoming me to the team before I had even ever had an interview. I literally was writing an email back saying, hey, I love the fact that you think I have this job, but I haven't talked to anybody yet, so I just want to make sure I got this email. I'm the right person to get this email. And then they kind of backdated things, and we had an interview. And so God's working there, and then this other call that I'm working on while I'm trying to get this online work, that doesn't play out. And then by January, I'm looking at my wife, and I'm saying, you know, I think we could do Fairbanks now with this online work. I think we can make it work. And that snowballed to a couple of conversations and a request for a few more months to pray and think about it. And then us seeing, yeah, confirming the work and the volume of the work at Liberty and the ability to take that wherever we go, whenever we go somewhere. And that's what led to us taking the call. So that kind of tells the big picture story of how we got to where we are even today, standing here and worshiping with you all. We will be in Fairbanks. Fairbanks is the largest city in the interior of Alaska. It is considered the interior. We are not near any coastlines. We are not near any water. That helps with the weather in the summer, keeps it warmer. But, you know, there's the downside in the winter, not being as close to the ocean. We'll talk about that. You know, statistical numbers, demographics within the last few years, Fairbanks is looking at about 32,000 people in the city, which is basically the same population that we had in the closest city to us in Virginia, which was Charlottesville. Fairbanks is a little bit more spread out of the city than Charlottesville was. 97,000 in what they call the Fairbanks North Star Borough, which is the greater area around Fairbanks. And that's right, it's probably second to Anchorage, but it seems like Juneau is maybe coming up and overtaking that second place. So there's some questions about the numbers there. When we say Fairbanks is in the interior, it's 196 miles south of the Arctic Circle. So if you look at a map of Alaska, the first kind of places where your eye is usually drawn to, Anchorage always jumps out, it's right on the coastline. Once you do that, let your eyes travel up about 3 or 4 inches, and that's where Fairbanks is. And it really is. I mean, the Arctic Circle is a day trip if you're in the Fairbanks. You can hop in a car and you can drive up to the Arctic Circle. We almost did that last summer. We decided not to because we were borrowing a car for the summer from someone in the church, and it's not listed as an easy drive. And really, it's the Arctic Circle. So what you do is you drive up there, you get out, you get a picture in front of the sign that says the Arctic Circle, and then you get back in the car and you drive back. Basically, it's what you're doing. There is the University of Alaska. The founding campus for the University of Alaska is in Fairbanks, so it is very much a university town. Fairbanks is very much a normal city in the sense it would not seem much different to you in terms of the types of facilities, the types of infrastructure, restaurants, shopping, hospitals, university campus that you would find in any town or city that you went into in the lower 48. The native people in that area are the Athabascan people, and there is a connection to them at times, but they do tend to stay out in the villages. There is some really interesting, I could get into in another setting if you wanted to ask, but there's some interesting challenges there, especially in terms of how the government has dealt with the native people. Basically, the government gives them all the money that they could want so that the government can get from the land what the government wants. And there's a tension because the people, as we know, the people end up becoming oppressed by the government because they're known for, they'll ride their snow machines. You gotta call them snow machines in Alaska. I found out I called it a snowmobile and was almost run out of town. They'll ride their snow machine until it's out of gas, the Athabascan people, the natives. They'll ride it until it breaks down, and then they'll just go put it on a pile of snow machines out of gas or broken down, and they'll just go and buy another one. And so there's this real challenging relationship in terms of that. But they are there. They are nearby. Fairbanks is in the Tanana Valley, where the Chena River will drain into the Tanana River. The Tanana River is a glacial river. There's several in Alaska. So it always looks high, it always looks fast, it always looks muddy. And that's because those rivers in Alaska are always full of silt from the glacial runoff. Actually, these are very dangerous rivers because what happens is if people get into the river or fall in, the silt gets into their clothes, and there's usually no recourse at that point for an individual. And there's several tens and tens and tens of people every year in Alaska who have accidents in these rivers. So the hills north of Fairbanks and east of Fairbanks will gradually rise into the White Mountains and to the Yukon River area, which I think is probably a couple hours, at least one spot on the Yukon River is a couple hours from Fairbanks. The other thing that everybody wants to know about when I tell them or we talk about moving to Alaska is the weather and the climate. It is classified as subarctic, right? So that's the official classification. The average first and last dates with a freezing temperature are September 9th and May 15th. All right, so there is a really good, sound, strong summer, what we would think of as a summer, but it's obviously much later. And they do have freezes in June and July. It's not uncommon for them to have freezes. And those would be overnight freezes, usually. When we first got there last summer, we spent first night in a hotel room, and then we moved on to the Christian camp that we were staying for the summer. And that first night in that house, I think that night it got down to the upper 30s. So that was interesting. It is considered the coldest large city in the U.S., but I've told people, if you remember the polar vortexes from last winter, there were numbers of days where it was colder in Chicago than it was in Fairbanks last winter. So obviously everything is cycling. The average temps go from negative 40 degrees in the winter to 80 degrees in the summer. So there is a swing, right? I think we maybe had two days last summer that hit 90? There are lots of lakes, and there are lots of people that do stuff in the lakes during the summer. They go swimming, they go water skiing, they, you know, do all the water sports. But they have from June until, you know, mid-August, maybe the end of August. And with all the sunlight that they have, it is interesting to see everybody is pushing to get all their activities in all summer. So that's interesting. This is not a mission work in that the church doesn't have a beachhead in Alaska. There is. It has been established. One of the interesting things you see in the museums, and this picture is from the museum in town, William J. Gordon was known as the Flying Bishop of Alaska. He arrived in Alaska in 1943, sent there from the Episcopal Church, obviously a different Episcopal Church in 1943 than it is today. In those first couple of years, he traveled 6,000 miles by dog team. At 29, he was selected as the third Episcopal bishop of Alaska. The interesting story about that is he was like holed up in an abandoned igloo in some storm or something when the Episcopal Church down in North Carolina or whatever, you know, nominated and appointed him as the bishop. After he was appointed bishop, he learned to fly, and he was headquartered in Fairbanks, and he did all his work basically as what we would think of today as a bush pilot. They actually have his plane hanging in the museum there. And when he had other workers or missionaries that were sent up to him to go out, this is the quote that he's famous for. He would tell them, "Go and ask one of the people in the village, they will teach you." So that was all the training you got by the way. He showed, pointed them in the right direction, and he said, "They'll teach you how to live. Go do the work of the gospel." There in Fairbanks right now, there is a large presence of fundamentalist churches, what we would think of as fundamentalists. There in Alaska, there's a large presence of Russian Orthodox churches, which makes sense geographically. We went into a little town called Delta Junction last summer. It was about 2.5 hours east of Fairbanks, southeast. And we drove by a Russian Orthodox church just in the countryside. I was blown away just to see the church. And then we went to the grocery store. They had an IGA in Delta Junction, and probably 90% of the prepackaged food was Russian. It had Russian labels, and so we thought that was pretty interesting. There are probably less than 5 Reformed or Presbyterian churches in the whole state. Interestingly, in terms of the history, Pastor Jack Phelps, who he's been ministering there for 35 or 40 years, most of those 5 churches, if it's 5, most of those were probably in some way, shape, or form planted or supported or started by him and his congregation. So they have had a very productive and fruitful work in terms of the Reformed and Presbyterian Church in Alaska. The ministry in Fairbanks. This is a picture of us doing some gold panning last summer. And we did actually find some gold and got very wet along the way. But I think of this verse in 1 Peter 1:6-8. "In this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you've been grieved by various trials, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ." And that's our goal, and that's our desire to do that work. And I'm basically looking at this in terms of 3 stages as we go up there, really a full time now, in a permanent setting. First, immediately take over shepherding role and begin ministering to the families and individuals, which they have a strong desire for and they have a need for. The second stage would be to become a part of the community, connect with local pastors, minister in the community through relationships and volunteering. There's a very, very well funded rescue mission in Fairbanks. There's a hospital, there's a prison, and there's work there to be done. And then third, to work and pray, and to pray and work to help the congregation become stable and self-sufficient. Our stated goal is to help the congregation become stable and self-sufficient in 5 years. And in the past, I've been someone, I don't like to talk about some of these things in terms of numbers and years. But I've also come to realize that I think it's important to kind of speak some of these things out so you actually have a goalpost that you're working toward. And so, how do you define stable and self-sufficient? I don't know if there's a good definition for that. But what we're hoping to do with God's grace is to reach an attendance of 50 within 5 years of getting there. And I think that that's doable. It's a small church. When the six get there, okay, the congregation will be at about 25. So that's what we're looking at in terms of that. And my wife wanted to know why I put this picture up. When we were staying in the house last summer, Jessica bakes a lot of bread, And she was baking bread for us on this particular day. And she did all the prep work that you have to do with bread and went to put it in the oven, and the oven had quit. We still had burners. And so she did a little, you know, Googling and stuff and figured out that you could, this is kind of like a makeshift oven, right? So you have the two loaves of bread, you have pots with hot water on the outside of these pans that are kind of tented over. She reminded me yesterday that it didn't work, but she gave it a good effort. I think if she had a couple more pans and she could have filled in the end, she would have had an oven box. But I put that up there because there's no right way here, right? And we all, when we're doing the work, we all have to figure out how to be flexible and how to think outside the box and how to be problem solvers. And even more so, I think, in a place like Fairbanks with a mission church. And to me, that was just a great representation of having to think that way. It's a small mission church. It is the last frontier. That's its nickname. People call it that. I will tell you right now, it is the last stop. We were trying to figure out why so many flights end up coming into Fairbanks in the middle of the night, right? It's because it's the last stop. It's the last place that people go. Because it's the last stop, there are a lot of people in Fairbanks who are there because they're running from something, right? That's where you end up. It's one of those places where you end up if you're trying to get away. And we met those people. We got to know those people. Some of those people are faithful Christians within the congregation that we're going to work in. But they're there for a reason. And we start learning about that. People are very independent in Alaska. One of the sayings is that Fairbanks is a city of 30,000 individuals. Now, I think in some respects, that's probably true of much of our culture today. But I think it was true in Fairbanks before that became true of the culture. There is immense poverty up there. There are two military bases. There's Fort Wainwright, which is the Army base right in Fairbanks. And then there's Eielson, which is the Air Force base, which is, you know, probably about 20 minutes southeast of Fairbanks. And as I said before, there's a rescue mission, there's a hospital, there's a jail, there's a prison, right? So these are the ministry opportunities. And we're going to have to be willing to think outside the box. And we're going to have to be willing to be problem solvers and try to build an oven on top of the stone out of pots and pans. Because these are very similar to the ministry that the Church of Oakwood has here, that the church has anywhere. And yet we're trying to figure out how to do it when it's 58 below in January. And it's dark 22 hours out of the day. Which I will tell you, whether it's all sunlight all summer or it's all dark all winter, that has a huge impact on people and their emotions and their psyche and all of these things. So those are the opportunities. I think about this. I was thinking about this verse yesterday, Isaiah 52:7. How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him who brings good news, who publishes peace, who brings good news of happiness, who publishes salvation, who says to Zion, your God reigns. And I don't say that just because that's about us going there. That is true about every Christian, wherever they are at, in the gospel that they bring to whoever they come in contact with. Covenant Reformed Church is the church that we're going to work at. What does she need? Well, Paul answers this question. How then will they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how are they to believe in him of whom they have never heard? And how are they to hear without someone preaching? And how are they to preach unless they are sent? And that's that. In terms of the flock there right now, that's as far as they can see. That's what they need. And that's a conversation that Jessica and I had for literally the last 12 months. Right? If there's people there and they want and they need a pastor, who are we to say no? And I'm dead serious when I say that. We've had that conversation. The day before we accepted the call, we were online looking at little farms in Appomattox, Virginia, and saying, well, we could do this. I could take my online job. We can have our little farm in Appomattox. And I read a couple of things from a couple of old-time pastors online who basically said, you know, I want to retire. I'm tired, but there's still work to be done. And I came out of the room, I looked at my wife and I said, we need to go. We need to go. So that's what they need. What are our needs? Our needs are prayer. We're going to talk about that in the sermon today. We need people praying for us constantly. It's putting us up to the Lord in prayer. Finances are a thing that, you know, my wife and I have never spent too much time thinking too much about. And there's a lot of unknowns in Fairbanks with this call. God has provided a church that can pay us something. God has provided a job that can pay me something. But we have no idea what the next 5 years hold. So we've got this goal of $10,000 a year for 5 years, and that's to fill in gaps. We know the cost of living in Fairbanks is generally much higher than most other places. There's issues of transportation. There's issues of heating. There's issues of tuition for our kids. We're going to have to figure out some form of health insurance, which, you know, can be done in lots of different ways. I only share this with you all because the elder board asked me, gave me permission to come and present this to you. We need your prayers. That's what we need. Okay? And we believe that God will take care of the rest. But in terms of those, there are different ways to help fund the work. One of the best ways, I think, for individuals is you can send money to our sponsor church, and that will take care of the tax purpose end of things for people. But there's also ways to give directly to us, whether digitally or through the mail. And I present this to you in Christ's service and yours from us and the BF family. So that's the presentation, I think. Yeah. There's definitely a little bit of time here. Does anybody have any questions? I'm happy to cover anything that was of any interest to you, any questions that you might have. There is a minor league baseball team in Fairbanks, and there have been a myriad of professional baseball players that have played through. They're the Fairbanks Gold Panthers, and they have at least one game every summer at midnight. So, because they can. And there's also a golf course that in the summer is basically open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and people get their 1 a.m. tee times if they need to. And there's also people who will go out and chop wood in the middle of the night because you can. So, why not? Any questions at all? Yes?
So you have to provide your own housing, right?
Yes.
Because the church is a Methodist church,
right.
So have you looked into that at all?
We have. We spent a couple of months during the spring with a real estate agent thinking about buying. I err on that side whenever it comes to housing. But ultimately, we decided to rent the first year. And we already have, in fact, our lease started yesterday. So we already have a townhouse. It's part of a really nice community where we're going to have lots of neighbors and playgrounds. And I think that some of the people in the congregation are going to have it as much as it can be set up and ready to go for us when we get there. So, and that's actually our address up there, 747 Minto Court.
That's right.
So, yeah, so we're very, very thankful that played out the way it did, because getting housing up there is tricky. You know, there's a lot more rentals in terms of houses than there are apartments. And because you have the two military bases, that really helps landlords be able to keep the prices as high as they possibly can keep them, because, you know, the military would basically say, okay, go get your house and we'll pay your housing. And so there's that. And then there's, if you get a place where you're responsible for the utilities can be quite high, as you would expect, especially in the winter. And then on top of that, there's lots of houses where they don't have water. You know, so people live in what they call dry cabins. And these can be like just outside of town. It's not like they're out in the bush, right? And they'll have these giant water tanks, and they'll either have a company come and deliver the water to them, or they will have a water tank on the back of a pickup truck that never comes off the pickup truck, and they'll go get water every couple of days and kind of put it back in their reservoir tank. Some of these houses are plumbed, so they're beautiful houses that have the kind of, you know, interior plumbing that we would expect.
It's just plumbed to this 1,500-gallon water tank that's in the garage. But some of them aren't, and those are what they call the dry cabins. And that includes outhouses and everything. Yes?
Two questions.
Yes.
How far is your home from the church? And then do you have access to the church facility for meetings and things other than your rental on Sunday afternoon, and you go at other times and have church functions?
Yeah, that's a good question. The house that we're renting now is only about 10 minutes from the church. So we're in Fairbanks proper where we're living, and the church is in Fairbanks proper. I do believe they use the church for the facility for other events. It's very common. What this congregation does is after church, they'll have a fellowship time every Sunday, and it seems like at least half of those fellowship times they're having at the church. But there are tensions. I just had to write a letter to the congregation because, as you would expect, when you're renting someone else's church facility, at the end of June, the Methodist Church is doing this whole church is a verb thing, right? And so they're not going to have worship, and they've got all these people signing up on Sunday to go out and do these different things, and, you know, ministry. And therefore, the church was not available for our congregation that Sunday afternoon. And so I was seeing some things online, like, well, we'll just sign up and we'll go do, right? So I had to write this letter and say, look, I know we're technically not, like, I'm technically not your pastor until July 1st, but you all need to find yourself in worship on Sunday, June 30th. And we should be there. We can have worship in our living room if you want, or find some other facility. I said, but my family and I will be worshiping on June 30th, and we would invite you all to worship with us. So yeah, those tensions of renting a facility are definitely present. Other questions? Anything at all? Yes, Chuck.
It's long been my impression that many, if not most, Alaskans supplement their pantries by hunting and fishing. I learned you have those skills. Mm-hmm. You might use those to supplement your own pantry and perhaps a food ministry.
Yeah, absolutely. And all that stuff is already happening. We ate so much fish last summer, and we loved it. We didn't get sick and tired of it. There are, if you are a resident in Alaska on certain rivers during certain salmon runs, you're allowed to dip net, which means you can go out in a boat or go from shore, and they have these giant hoop nets, and you can just scoop up as many salmon, you know, I think you get like 20 some odd a day that you're allowed while that season is open. And that's only for residents. And we went to a member's house after church, and him and his friend had gone on Friday and Saturday. And, you know, I was at a table helping them fillet, I don't know, it was like 30 some odd, 42 salmon that they had caught in the previous 24 hours. And so, yeah, we walked away with a couple of huge fillets that they let us have for the work. And, you know, a lot goes in their freezer and a lot gets smoked. And I think the culture utilizes those things as well for people who are in need. And so the plan is that, you know, as much as we're able, we will utilize, you know, the bounty of God's creation as well for that. But it's interesting too. There's lots of dog sledders, right? And the best thing for your dogs over the winter is frozen salmon. So they're getting as much as they can. And because they'll have 30, 40, 50 dogs, they'll run a couple of teams, and they're just keeping it, and they're pulling out frozen chunks of salmon and throwing it to the dogs every day. So those tensions that exist in our culture exist up there. Well, if you got people at the rescue mission who, you know, you're having trouble getting donations, getting food, and you got, and these people have every right, if they want to be a resident and scoop up as many salmon as they can so they can keep their dogs healthy in the winter. But yeah, so life is complicated. And those tensions are there as well. But yeah, we ate a lot of rainbow trout last summer. A lot. I've gotten several requests for frozen salmon to be sent back down to the lower 48. So we'd be happy to do that as we get our hands on it.
That could be a new industry.
Yeah, it could be. Jared. It is true.
Would you qualify for that?
Yes. Yes, yeah, that's a great question. It's called the Permanent Dividend Fund, and you have to be a resident for a year. You apply for it in October, so my family will be able to apply for, it'll be about a year and a half, from when we get there, we will first be eligible. What Alaska does is they take all of their mineral deposits and everything else, they have a permanent dividend, and whatever dividends pay out on that fund every year, they take that and they divide it up by every resident, and they write that check each year. So in the case of my family, that is good. You don't have to be a certain age or anything. That's good for every resident. So you got a family of six, you can apply for and get, you know, six checks. It can be, I've heard, as low as $600 or $800 a month per person. It can be as high, I think the highest it ever was maybe 14. I mean, not a month, a year, I'm sorry. One time a year, wishful thinking. And
we're all gonna write.
And there are tensions, right? Like, you've got a governor right now who is, he has made a lot of people unhappy because he's decided to take some of that and apply it to some other things in the budget. And constitutionally, he's not supposed to be able to do that. So it's like anywhere else, he's limited probably his time in office because he hit people in the pocketbook and they're not happy about that, but it is there. The other thing that's sort of connected to that is in terms of homeschooling. Homeschooling is a huge thing in Alaska. It has always had to be because you have so many people who live out in a way, and they long ago had established that there is money that you can get from the state to do your homeschooling. So some people choose to take all of it. Some people choose to take none of it because there's always a catch, right? And so if I'm going to take a percentage of this money to homeschool my kids, there are certain curriculums that I'm only able to use. There are actually one or two Christian homeschool curriculums that do qualify, but there are certain reports that I have to be willing to make. But if you qualify and you do that, you can use that homeschool money for computers, for the internet service at your house, anything that is being used for the children's education and schooling. It has been reported that Alaska has gotten the highest ratings for homeschool, being homeschool friendly out of all the states. And Pastor Jack Phelps is one of the people who started the homeschool fund and organization and worked hard to get the laws to where they're at today. So he was on the forefront of a lot of that work back in the 80s and 90s. But again, every family is making a decision whether or not they want to have that tie, right, or that connection. I know we're getting down, and it's about 20 after, so I'm going to go ahead and close in prayer. Heavenly Father, Lord, we thank you and we praise you for your gospel, your grace to us. We thank you for the congregation here and the work that you continue to do through Oakwood. We thank you for the opportunity that we have had to meet together again and to share this work in Fairbanks. And we ask, Lord, above all else, that your word would go forth, whether it's here in Troy, in Albany, whether it's in Fairbanks, and anywhere in between. And we hold on to the promise that it will not return void, and we thank you for that. We pray that you would now feed us on your word and at your table. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.